Turn on the
Are you sitting comfortably with Mark? Let us begin. How are you on this extra season two? It's been a long time coming out, this one. A thousand apologies, one reason and another. It kind of is how it is. Are you pleased to know I'm literally dancing on my chair? And there is no noise.
No squeak. Wow. I'm sat cross-legged with no top on my living room floor as the wife has just demanded the use of the spare room so she can play with her Lego.
Yeah, I'm sweating. I should have my top off because it's roasting up here. For some reason in Blackpool, it's gone super hot today.
25 degrees on the drive home from work. You know, I'm thinking, why am I going home to record? Or should we mess around with a floater rod? So let's crack on.
Let's crack on. Yes, we got a couple of subjects we've chatted to our guests about today. We've got the usual guests that we've been having on the previous ones: Ian McMillan, Adam Penning, Ian Russell,
Chili
Briggsy, Chillian
Briggsy, Lee Jackson,
Adam Penning. Yes, yes, amongst others. I think there's one more. Oh no, Mark 2 is you on the second channel. I'm looking at my recording channel. Yes,
Mark 1.
You as well. But wow. Depending on some of them you recorded on the telephone, some of you you recorded two different times, I think, and you had different mics, so the EQ's different.
That's true.
So you've got different channels for each one. But yeah, we won't bother with geeky stuff. My chair does creak a little bit though. It's like a leather, it's not the chair creaking, it's the actual imitation leather. Or I don't know if you can hear that, Mil.
It's your ass. Your ass has turned to leather.
Yeah, probably. We're all getting a bit old now. But yeah, we a couple of subjects. We started off season one with these subjects, actually, and it was fairly. It was one of my favourite episodes, but one of the most sort of gruesome ones, because we're talking about injuries. And injuries, yeah, they can make you cringe a little bit. There's a few people complained in the first series that they didn't enjoy listening to sort of gory stories. But I know our first guest that we're going to get to shortly is Ian McMillan, and he's got a story about dentists, and I don't particularly like dentists myself. I'm not sure about you, Mark, but I'm not scared of much. Well, no, that's a lie. I'm scared of quite a lot now. I'm getting older. I wasn't scared of much when I was younger. You know, we used to climb up pylons and jump off them, and you know, I wasn't scared of heights or anything. Now I stand on something really high, and my bottle's going. I've definitely developed vertigo in a later age. But I've always been scared of the dentist, and I don't like needles, and I don't like dentists, and putting a needle in your gum is probably one of the most horrific thoughts I can possibly have. And I know Ian McMillan, who we'll get to in a minute. So it's kind of like a scary story and an injury, I think, all in one, because I'm scared of the dentist. But so I know Ian McMillan's is mouth related. But have you had any injuries in recent times?
Not in recent times, which is quite odd, to be honest, pal, because it's kind of building up to a big one. My head's going to fall off on something, or a limb's going to depart. Something, I say that I've had enough bad luck this year.
Didn't you have a hook in your finger recently?
Not recently, no. I've had it a few times in the past, but, you know, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but the most memorable one was my one trip to Kevin Nash's Church Lake. It was a size 4 Fang X. I'm tying the rig up, the lead is balanced on my knee, 3.5 ounces, it just rolled off, and then pull the hook right round to the bend, you know, that soft bit of tissue in the hinge between your thumb and first finger?
I know it well.
Yes, right into there. And, I, you know, when you speak to Kevin, you've got to thank him from me for having a barbless rule. That could have been a trip to the hospital for me.
Yeah, it could. I think the last injury I saw witnessed on the bank was probably on a Carpcast social when we went to Christchurch last year. Frank Warwick, I was stood behind him. He was casting, and it's sort of longer rod. It was in the winter, and there wasn't many of us. Autumn it was actually, October, but wasn't many of us. So we were pretty well spread out on the lake, and he was doing a cast. It was maybe 80 yards. He'd had a fish off that rod already, and then. Standing behind him, I think he had a big string gun or something. He was casting something heavy. It could have been a bag even. And he wallops it out, and I just heard a crunch. And I'm not really sure what happened, but something happened with his reel, whether the bail arm went over or the back wine kicked in or came off or something. But he started screaming in pain anyway. And as we know from the series one, if you haven't listened to it already, go back and listen to the injury stories from Frank there. He's got a couple of fairly gruesome ones, an injury with a wheelbarrow, I think one of them, and another one was a baiting needle through his kidneys. But So I get the impression, you know, bad things can tend to happen to him. But, you know, I thought it's one of them, like, you know, reel goes over, it hurts, it bruises your finger or thumb or whatever. But he's screaming in pain. he's definitely not happy. And anyway, he brought it over. I think it was his fingers covered in claret. It's like it's everywhere, it's dripping. And we're on the banks. So we haven't got, you know, much to do with it. But it basically took the top of his finger off, and it got worse all night. I'm saying, let's take you to the hospital. I think his finger was broken. He took like the top of it off, and there was blood everywhere. And we had this like antiseptic, you know, that like gel stuff that you get that's antibacterial. Put some of that on it anyway. Between the blood, the top of his finger come off, and that kid, and he would not get any treatment for it. I'm like, let's go to the hospital, I'll take you somewhere now. And he would not go. Brayden, anyway, every couple of hours he kept coming down to my swim, showing me it, and I just wanted to vomit. It was absolutely disgusting. So I mean, we probably covered our own ones on the last round of these questions, but have you witnessed any other people?
Not for a while, to be honest. You know, there's one that springs to mind. Do you remember Robbo? Is it Robinson or Robson from up your way?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, he's a bit of a chunk. I think he's about 18 stone, you know, big lad, you know, fireman, you know, well built. And like me, he probably shouldn't be climbing too high up trees anymore.
I remember.
Yeah, the first on five swim at the World Park has got a nice tree to the right. You know, he could get quite a way up, even I could. And he could, until one branch kind of went crack. He came flying all the way down. There's another branch which, when I saw it, this branch that he hit on the way down, it didn't even slow him down, it just broke. It's about as thick as my calf. It's not a thin branch. And then he landed on the deck, which, as you know, it's all dirt and gnarly old roots sticking up. And I can't remember, I think he broke a couple of ribs and you know, a few other injuries. But being a rough and tough fireman from Manchester, he packed all his gear up on his own, wheeled his back to the car and drove home before getting any medical attention.
Yeah, I think I arrived either just as he was leaving. I think I saw him while he was still there. He said he was driving home, and I think you're right. I think he'd broke a couple of ribs. He didn't fish for quite a while after that. It took him a little while to recover, but yeah, he managed to get himself home.
Do you know what? That is the action of the carp gods. His first ever session, he caught paddle.
Yes,
49 pound.
Yeah, paddle was a 50 pound common that was kept a little bit quiet, except for the sort of the ones in that area that knew the wall pack, and even ones that knew didn't know it was in there. They some people were led to believe it lived in another lake, if I remember rightly. But yeah, it was a ticket we managed to get eventually, and sadly it died before I caught it. But yeah, Robbo had it on his first bite on a chodrick. It was one of those fish with the overslung mouth, wasn't it? Like we spoke
really
about.
Really overslung, yeah.
Yeah, again, was a tricky one, once a year or once every couple of years. And we've mentioned this many times on the Carpcast, haven't we, that the fish with those type of mouths seem to be better at getting away with getting caught more. and I'm sure it's to do with the shape of the mouth, but one rig that does seem to nail him is either a stiff hinge or a chod rig, which is very similar, isn't it, to a stiff hinge in the way it works. So yes, we've digressed a little, but yeah.
It's true, though. The carp gods giveth, and then the carp gods punish.
Yeah, I actually broke two ribs on the bank. I don't know if I told this story or not. It was the only time I entered the British Carp Championships. Roger and I entered it. We did a Northwest qualifier. It was actually on Pendle View, if you remember that place. We ended up coming second. And qualifying through to the main final, which was on a place down on the south coast near Dover. I forget the name of the place now, but it's like salt water. It's bloody place and flatfish in there and all sorts, as well as loads of carp. It's the same place that Danny Fairbrass won it the year before, I think. Danny and Damien, was it? Yeah, they won it the year before. It had like loads of backfilling on it. And the fish, or whatever, swim was getting the back filling, was where the fish got caught. But anyway, I just started to get ill. Unfortunately, Roger couldn't make the final. They allowed me to fish with Dave, my mate Dave, my other fishing pal. And we've gone down there. We didn't get off at our first. We came out 22nd in the draw, and our first choice swim went by the 21st person, and that swim won it by 4 times second place. It was from the info we learned the year before, where you need to be wherever the back filling was. This swim had all the back filling and nobody picked it. Like I said, 20 people came out in the draw before us and didn't pick that swim, and we were like, please, please. And we come, and it went, the lads before us, I get this for unlucky, the lads that picked it, that came out 21st, if we came out 22nd, they didn't even mean to pick that swim. They wanted the one next door, and they got the number wrong. So when they went down there, we followed them down there, when we were taking our gear, and they're like, this isn't the one we wanted, we wanted that one there. I was like, which they could have had that one if they'd have got the number right. I was like, for fuck's sake. And then it absolutely smashed it, that swim. It won by a country mile, and the swim they wanted came second, which was like next door. But anyway, I digress. I managed to get ill. I think I had a bit of a cough when I went down there. Anyway, it got really bad, and I ended up cracking some ribs by coughing. It was like a real deep chesty cough. It turns out I had pleurisy, which is like a sort of mild form of pneumonia. It's like water on the lungs. Not really sure how I got it, but I got really ill, to the point of they got paramedics down to the tournament for me. The organisers called paramedics down, and we had a few fish. I think we were leading the team comp at one point, but we ended up coming nowhere. Once I broke my ribs, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't lie down, I couldn't sit up. Every position was agony, and I'm stuck 300 and something miles from home, and I was dosing up on sort of all sorts of tablets that had been brought, painkillers and God knows what. I mean, I didn't know what was wrong with me at the time. I didn't know I'd cracked a rib, but anyway, I ended up doing what Robbo did. I managed to get all the gear in the motor. I don't know how. I think it was maybe your body kicking in whatever chemicals it needs to get you home, because I managed to get in an upright position sitting in my van or whatever I had at the time. I think I had that, remember that purple Escort van? And
The old Securico one.
That's right, yeah. And I managed to get home. Anyway, I've never been so ill. I was laid up for weeks once I got home. It's the first time. I left home when I was 19, and I was probably 36 years old then, roughly, maybe. It was maybe 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, maybe it was 34. Anyway, it's the first time I'd rung my mum to come and look after me since I'd left home, and she knew I was ill when I rang. I went, I think I need help. I didn't have a girlfriend at the time. I was in a mess. I was like hot and cold. It was like a hot and cold fever. It took me a good 2-3 weeks to get ready, to get better. It was so it's not quite a fishing, well, it was a fishing industry injury, as it happened while I was fishing. But yeah, it wasn't pleasant. I mean, we haven't really spoke about the most obvious fishing incapacitator, and that's the old bank bug. Do you ever get that? Just like a a sickness and diarrhea bug while you're fishing. Have you ever had that?
No, you know, there's one time I remember I was on peg 3 at Cromwell. I don't think there was anyone else on. I know it was, you know, winter. I spent most of the night actually curled up in the little brick hut, little fisherman's lodge, which is just at the back of that swim, just curled up next to the heater on.
Yeah.
So
some people are susceptible to the old bank bug. My mate Dave, he gets it quite a bit, at least once a year when he goes fishing. Just first night or second night, just goes under, like, uncontrollable shitting and pissing. I remember having it when I was young, actually. Fished a Prince Albert water called Dovemere when I was about 14, 15 years old. I remember getting it on there one night, just started going dark, felt ill, and that was it, throwing up. And you just don't, like, obviously your rods are out, you're too ill to reel them in, and you're just like, I don't want to bite, there's no way I could deal with a fish now feeling that ill. You just want to curl up and die. But I'm sure I've come across a few people that have had that bug. I wonder if I got hardened to it as a youth.
I can't remember. I mean, that time at Cromwell, I was just, it wasn't, diarrhea or anything like that. It was just a very short-lived, because come the morning, I felt still a bit groggy, but, I could function. As soon as I'd slept a bit.
I've got, I don't know if I can tell this story. I've just remembered.
That means you can. Go on.
I've just remembered an accidental story. Have I told it? Can I tell it? It's not very pleasant. Anybody who drinks to excess or parties heavily at the weekend might be able to relate.
Is this anything to do with Big Dave's and a bream?
It's similar but worse. Yeah.
Oh wow! Because I know we've already had that story on one of the extras, so I'm intrigued. Carry on. Let's hear this.
No, it's not very pleasant. It was when I had my bar, and we were partying and drinking all weekend, sort of four nights, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whatever. And I was fishing for Mr. Angry on Clifton at the time. And I remember I'd been up all weekend, hardly any sleep, overindulged in everything. And I remember what I used to do is get to the lake, get set up, and then sleep, recover for a day or two once we've rods are out. And the hard bit was while you're sweating out the weekend was getting set up and everything. Anyway, I've got down to like the sort of bird feed, which is like the first sort of area where you come to on the lake. I wheeled my barra down there. It's a bit of not a long trek from the car park, but you got to go over a gate and get your gear down there. Just wheeled it in there, having a look for fish like you do, just casting my eye over the whole lake, see if I can see anything before I decide where I'm going. And an accidental sharting occurred where I didn't know I needed the toilet or anything, but the next thing, it's down the back of my legs, like water, but not water. But I'm in a position because it's a country park in Salford, so you don't really want to leave your gear, number one. So I'm now in a quandary. I'm like, what do I do? My gear's out in the open, all on the barra. I'm like a bit of a distance away from the car park where I know I've got spare clothes, and there's a visitor centre up there as well that's got toilets in, so I know I can like go and get cleaned up. But what do I do with my gear? Like, I'm in a position where there's no way I can wheel my gear back up the hill over the gate and then load it all in the motor. If I leave it on the lake, in the middle of a park lake unattended, there's a chance of it getting robbed. And I'm stuck here, like, incapacitated. it was not a pleasant situation. I ended up just having to bite the bullet and risk the gear getting nicked. I wheeled it sort of into a swim and just, like, put it by a tree, sort of kind of out of sight from the path. But, if anybody walked down the water's edge, they would see it. And I then sort of, like, waddled back, got some spare clothes out the motor, went in the visitor centre. I'm probably not smelling pleasant at this point either. And then because the toilets are also behind the desk of the visitor centre, so you kind of have to ask permission and go past the woman, which I did. And then obviously I'm in there quite a while, so she's probably sat at the desk going, what's he doing? Because I've been in there a while, because, you know, I'm having to like completely strip, do like a wash, you know, like a hand towel wash, then get redressed, then try and wash down, you know, the soiled clothes and bag them and get out. I was in there ages, conscious all the time of, she's probably going, what on earth's he doing? And that's if she hadn't smelt me on the way in. Yeah, it was not a pleasant scenario. The same thing actually happened to me, not fishing. Has this gone a bit too much information? I don't know. Anyway, coming home from Ibiza a few weeks ago, I'm in the airport, probably not eating for 2 days. We've been partying, and me and the missus gone into Burger King in the airport. I ordered the Burger King, I've sat down, I've ate a little bit of it, and exactly the same thing happened in Burger King in Ibiza airport. I was just like, well, I'm getting too old for this, I need to stop drinking to excess. This is not good.
Yeah, there's a worrying pattern appearing here.
Yeah, so, it happens to many people my age, drink to excess.
A question. Have you ever taken, everyone's heard of antibiotics, but have you ever taken probiotics?
No.
Yeah, I have, and recently I was not too well, and so we took the antibiotics the doctor prescribed, which, you know, they do the job, they get rid of the bugs, but they also destroy all the good bacteria in your gut. So to replace that, I was taking probiotics, which, they work, you know, you can tell, you know, just the way you feel, because, you know, your own immune system is comes from your gut, a lot of it. So you've got to look after your gut health. So after about a week, I started farting again. I'm thinking things are coming back to normal. And, you know, I'd got down to, this is a trip to Monks, and they've got a nice port-a-loo in the car park. I thought it's about halfway around the lake, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm going to turn back, head to the port-a-loo. I made it, thankfully, and let's just say probiotics make things, they get things moving, shall we say. It lifted me up.
Hey, how did we get on toilet humour?
I don't know. let's move on. We were talking about injuries, and then you just started talking about poo.
Well, it's kind of fishing related,
we all poo.
Yeah, we do, and it's an issue fishing sometimes, like I say, with the old bank bug or whatever. But let's move swiftly on and see.
Before you move on, you know, we find our own poo disgusting. Yeah, we go get a big fat carp on the mat, and it starts passing something out of its rear vent. What do? We stick our fingers in it and start sniffing it.
Have they been on my bait or someone else's yet?
Yeah, or is it just crushed snails and hemp and...
Well, let's get Ian McMillan on and find a genuine injury.
Worst carping injury you've ever suffered on the bank?
Worst carping industry? Worst carping injury?
Injury.
Worst carping injury. I'm quite a careful guy, but there has been a couple of calamities. Of which, and again, I'd love to say that I've been leg chopped off and then thrown it back on like Bear Grylls and all that sort of shit. But so there's a couple that there's one that, and I've still suffer only till about 6 months ago. And I remember it was years and years ago on Christchurch, and I never used to look after my teeth because I'm absolutely petrified of the dentist. And I'm not. The only thing I'm petrified of is a needle going in my gum, and the fact that when he's poking around in my mouth with that thing, I want to rip his head out of his shoulders. I want to kill him because I just don't like it. So I never used to go. Even when I worked at JCB, we got like a scheme, free dentist, qualified dentist on site, you know, not some welder that did it out of the back of his welding area with a pair of pliers. But I never went because I was so petrified. So years and years ago, I always have clean teeth, don't get me wrong, I don't not clean my teeth. But I'm shit scared of the dentist. So I've got this chronic toothache and I keep taking painkillers and taking painkillers. I've gone to NTO and I'm eating something. I can't remember what it was. It was probably about 15 years ago. And I heard this crack. And I thought, oh God, that obviously wasn't what I was eating. That wasn't supposed to contain crunchy bits like that. So then obviously flipped around with my tongue and half of my tooth had come off. It broke. and then I'm in absolute agony. So I hadn't been with Kathy long, my missus, and so I've rung her up like the mad horse that I am, and I've gone, oh, I'm in pain. I said, I've got to go to the dentist. She went, you get scared of the dentist. She said, you aren't even at a dentist. I said, you need to get me in a dentist. But bear in mind, I was in Stanton Harcourt, a little sleepy village in the middle of Oxfordshire. I've gone, just find me a dentist. I said, I need someone to do with this tooth. Now, there's obviously, I'm not a dentist, but I could tell by the feeling of my tongue that I've obviously got a little vanity mirror that I take fishing with me. So I'm trying to have a look. It didn't look great. So she's run me back. So I've got you in an emergency dentist in Marlborough, which is another village just off the A40. Right, sweet. So I'm going over there. I'm feeling dead confident. And I've got to face my fears. I'm not a weak guy. I'm quite a tough guy. So I've gone in, and he's gone there. Basically, it's wrecked. He said, there's nothing I can do with this. Can't fill it, can't crown it, can't cap it. He says, it's rotten because obviously it's just decayed over the years. He said, I'm going to have to take it out. I'm sort of getting all hot, and I'm sweaty, and I'm absolutely shitting myself. I'm thinking, oh my God, well, having a tooth out, that's the other fear of like a bloke standing over me with a pair of pliers, pulling something out of my mouth, which is attached to my gums. So I thought, I've got to face this. So I've got to take it out, he says. Okay, I can feel myself now welling up, my heart's racing, even thinking about it. So he's jabbed me up with these needles. He's finally prized me out of the chair to let the anaesthetic take hold. I've gone in, come back in. He's then set to work on with his pliers. So he's got half a tooth. And then, they push down first, how that works. About. So they push down, twist a bit, and then you can feel, whoa, all the roots are coming loose. And then I've heard this crack. And then he's almost come flying out of my mouth with only a tiny bit more tooth in the pliers. Because the tooth was so rotten, he said, there's only bits that are coming out. So I'm trying to talk, like, I want to kill him. I've got visions of me just opening a proper kind of whoop-ass on him while he's trying to disfigure me with a pair of pliers. I said, you've got to get it out. I said, you can't leave half a tooth in there. So anyway, he's done the best he can. And I've gone. There's bits of tooth all over the floor while he's pulled out. So the bottom line is, he couldn't get all the roots out, and all he's basically done is obviously snapped and left. It turns out, and he didn't tell me this, he left two roots in, or two of the prongs that are on the bottom of your teeth. I presume they're roots. So everything's fine. I've gone back to Christchurch. Like, my mouth's throbbing, the blood in my mouth. I'm feeling proper sorry for myself. So time's gone on. So then I thought, from that day forward, I'm never going to neglect my teeth. So I go every 3 months now for a clean. And have a checkup every 6 months. So, over the course of the last 15 years, do you know I've had about 4 bits of tooth taken out from that area? So, not only did I have to endure this arsehole in Oxford butchering my tooth and leaving all these little bits of root in, I've then had to pay copious amounts of money over the last probably 10 years. Thinking, because you know, when the bits of tooth are forcing themselves out of my gum because they weren't attached to anything. Yeah. So then, what do you have to do? You have to have another needle, and then they have to, that which is more agony, more fact that I want to kill somebody, and then they have to just keep picking bits. Now, eventually, the last one was done last year where there was a tiny bit in that was getting very tender. So she'd done an x-ray, she said, there's a bit of tooth in there, so of course, I'm having flashbacks. So basically, it just cost me years of like tenderness in my gums. I mean, it had to come out if it was rotten. But so I suppose the moral of the story there is, make sure you look after your teeth and look after them. So to the point now, I'm proper obsessive, and it wasn't necessarily an injury. I did have an injury at Brimley where I used to be obsessive with my little. I got like a little Swiss Army knife. Yeah. Proper thought I was outdoor. Now it was very. It's a lot more. Cut back now for him. It was quite overgrown. This fish, the swim that I was baiting and wasn't really getting that much of attention, was quite overgrown. So I used to try and fish it every single week. So over the course of the time, I was like, got my little Swiss Army knife out there, got a little sore on it. Now this sore was probably about 2 inches long, hardly tree surgeon material. So I'm thinking, I'll just keep hacking away at these little twigs, and I'll just keep moving bits every week, and eventually, because you know when you hear a fish crash, it was a real awkward swim, and you're under your brolly, and then you have to run to the front of the swim to see where it's crashed. Yeah. And I was getting a bit bored of that, so I thought, I'll start doing a bit of pruning. So rather than leave it and think, right, I'll buy a little saw and just to keep it in my bow and just do it and make it a lot easier. So this one day I'm hacking, I'm sort of cutting through this branch, which is probably about an inch thick. We can imagine it's taken absolutely ages. I'm thinking, oh God, if somebody catches me, I'm going to get thrown off, I'm going to get banned for cutting a twig down. So then I'm cutting away and I think I hear somebody coming, so I start pushing and putting a bit more pressure on, and I've got the twig or the little bit of a branch, and I'm forcing it over to make the cut that I've already made easier to get me little Swiss Army knife in. So I'm pushing on and I've pulled too far back with the knife and it's come out and gone straight into my thumb, and I've cut this, and it definitely needed stitches right on the end of my thumb, because obviously I'm holding the branch with my left hand and sawing with my right. So the little Swiss Army knife's come out straight onto my thumb, and I'm looking at it, and there's now a V in the end of my thumb with blood pissing out all over the place. And I thought, oh, this isn't great. Luckily, it was my left hand, so I was obviously managed to get some kitchen roll out. Sat there for the remainder of the session. I didn't catch anything, luckily, because can you imagine the pictures? Yeah. It would have looked like something out of the Peter Sellers film where old the inspector copper geezer has the plaster bandage over his nose all the time. So, and I've still got the scar now on my thumb, it tells me I should never touch DIY. Because one, I'm useless. Two, I'm likely to cut something off or injure myself. And all three, make a complete mess of it and have to pay a tradesman more to fix it. So, yeah, they're my carpy injuries. Not massively mutilating or bad, but still ones that have caused me enough pain over the bloody years.
Yeah, Ian McMillan, one thing that struck me after listening to that is you know, if we do get an injury whilst fishing, we're normally a long way from home, aren't we? Or quite often we haven't got the comfort of like knowing where the local hospital is or being able to go back home and getting bandaged up. So maybe it's a good idea to find out, you know, if you join a syndicate or something that's away from home, is find out the local medical facilities. I know I got a hook in my finger while fishing in the Cotswolds. That's probably my most recent injury, actually. You remember that one? I had a size 7 twister embedded round the bend in the square in the middle of my thumb. And then tried pulling it out, couldn't do it. What I learned from that is it didn't hurt for ages, like because of the adrenaline and stuff. And I think that's your window of opportunity to get it out. Just rip it out quick. But I didn't. I ended up finding out in the local village, which was really close nearby, there was a doctor's surgery. It was shut Thursday afternoon, and it was a Thursday afternoon. It literally just shut. I ended up asking a local and going to the hospital, which was, I forget where it was, like Whitney or somewhere. It was a 10-15 minutes drive. But I remember being sat in the surgery going, this hasn't turned out too badly, until they started trying to pull it out by giving me laughing gas, which was an experience as well. I nearly knocked the nurse out. It hurt. It was in a long way. And I mean, they probably took an hour to poke it through my thumb, because that's what they do normally once it's in deep, don't they? They try and force the point back out through another hole, but obviously your thumb's pretty tough, isn't it? And they couldn't get it out. There were pliers and all sorts of tools they were bringing, and they had to put a load of needles in it and base my thumb in the end, because it was just hurting too much with laughing gas. But yeah, that laughing gas is fun. It doesn't make you laugh when they're trying to rip a hook out your finger, but a lot to be said for barbless hooks, eh, Mark?
yes, definitely, though, you know, you mentioned you know, knowing where the local meet. How many of us actually carry a first aid kit fishing with us?
Yeah, I mean, if you go fishing abroad, you normally do, because you have to drive abroad, you need a first aid kit in your motor. You know, you can get nicked if you don't have it. But yeah, you're right. I did for many years. In fact, the first session I ever took it, have I ever told this story actually? On Fendrayon, we're boat fishing at range. You know, you needed to be able to go 300 yards in some swims to get to the island or whatever. And we were using Nash bullet braid at the time. Remember that? The £20 bullet braid. It was like tow rope. Yeah. Which is sort of perfect for fishing there. I remember Dave had me, mate Dave again, featured three times in this so far. I remember he had his rods out at range. Swans have gone through the line. He's managed to drag them in. They've only got so far. He's ended up hand lining them in shallow water. And then so he's kind of got braid wrapped around his fingers, and the swan's bolted anyway, and you know what happens with braid around your fingers anyway, that's gone through to the bone. It was, oh no, now my bollocks are twinging just thinking about it right now. Actually, it was a bad one anyway. It was you know, could have lost his finger type job. But yeah, that was the first session I ever took a first aid kit, and we bandaged him up, and he managed to do the session. But yeah, I think plasters, bandages, and some sort of antiseptic Savolani type cream is an essential for your vehicle, isn't it? I think when you go fishing.
Yeah, definitely. When I was on the taxi, it's part of the regulations done by the local council, where you have to have a fire extinguisher and a first aid kit. You know, fully equipped first aid kit in the car, and you know, the fire extinguisher is now living in the shed, but the first aid kit is in the back of the van. And only for, like, you know, the odd little plaster here and there, but it has come in handy on occasion. So get one. I was surprised though, tackle companies do one.
Yeah,
to be fair. There's a gap in the market. We need to release the carp cast first aid kit.
Yeah, we can have a joint one for carp and humans, so we can have all your fish care stuff in it, like your propolis or whatever it's called, propolis.
Yeah,
and
we have we look after his carp. We have antiseptic for them, but not ourselves.
It's very, very, very good thought. Yes,
after we play with their poo,
I shall put it to Kevin. In the meantime, we were talking about bollocks twinging. I think Chili's got a story about that.
Oh.
The worst carping injury we've ever had. I've done the hooks in the hands. I've done all kinds of crazy stuff. But back in 1990, an old friend of mine, a lovely guy called Jeff Pink, it got me to go onto the car park lake at Yateley, and I really don't think I was ready for it. My army career had, you know, I just wanted to catch carp in the very, very limited time. I mean, talking about limited time in this day and age, they want to join the army and find out what limited time is all about. But I went up there in the summer leave, and the lake itself was as horrendously weedy as any of the guys had ever seen it. And Jeff was plumbing around from Trumpton's, which is a swim on a point on the car park lake, in the weed, and his big 4-ounce lead had got stuck in the weed, and I was stood right behind him. And he tightened down to it eventually and pointed his rod tip at it and started walking back. All of a sudden, it released from the weed past his hip in a fraction of a second and hit me full square in the family jewels. I went down like the proverbial sack of spuds. It was so painful, I didn't even roll around. And that part of my anatomy actually ultimately within three days had turned completely black and swollen up to twice the size that it should have been. It was so painful, and probably the funniest part about it was all the tackle shops around here, Raisins, Tackle Up at Fleet, wherever I went, a couple of guys had put some cricket boxes with Ian with Chili's 4-ounce lead protector on it. But yeah, it was probably it goes beyond fishing. It's probably one of the worst injuries I've ever had, and certainly the most painful.
Oh, imagine if that was nowadays, in where everyone can film everything on the phone. It'd be on Facebook and it'd go viral.
I think that would have gone viral, yeah. You know, I suppose when they're not feeling the pain, it's funny to watch a grown man cry.
Worst carping injury, okay. Well, I'll give you a couple. My first bad carping injury, well, actually, I'm always having carp injuries, and a lot of that is Jason Hayward's fault. Most of them these days are hook injuries. I'm quite an arboreal carp angler, so I'm always up trees, and I do think that, you know, the more you climb trees, the more likely, obviously, it's a numbers game, isn't it? So I'm really, really careful climbing trees. I haven't had an accident with a tree for quite a long time, since I fell in a dint and complete with a 40-foot tree in the middle of a Germany v England football match. But that's another story. But tree climbing's a worry, and I take extra care. I always keep the rule that you never put both feet on the same branch. But I do feel that that's something that we should all, because you do take it for granted, you know, and then all of a sudden you think, oh, I'm 45 years old and I'm 60 foot up, 40 foot up in the air and it's swaying in the wind. You do literally take your life in your own hands. But yeah, sorry, I just drifted there. So my first angling injury was I was down at a lake in Harlow where I sort of caught my first ever carp, and I have one of those Gardner bait needles. And if you remember the Gardner bait needles from the 80s, they had a matte black shaft with a see-through sort of neon green plastic handle and a barb bigger than a shark hook. And so I had one of that with the most ferociously spitefully sharp point. So I had this needle, and there was a spider running across my leg. It's pouring with rain. I'm sat on this little deck chair underneath a 45 inch wave lock, and there's a spider running up and down my leg, and I'm sort of just sort of prodding after it with this needle out of boredom. It's pouring with rain. My mate Chris Barnes was fishing with me. He's sort of come under the brolly and slipped at the same time, and he's fallen on top of this needle. He slipped in the mud and felt his whole weight on this needle, and it went almost to the hilt into my thigh, and remained there for quite some time. And I remember the pain was extraordinary, because the tip of it was scraping on the bone. I didn't know it at the time, but they're all tiny fragments of bone particle sort of on the x-ray around where it was. So that was why it was hurting so much, because this spiteful tip was engraving something into my femur. But every time I wiggled my leg was basically, because I was sat down, my leg was locked at 45 degrees, couldn't move it at all. This is the way it had gone through the muscle or something, I suppose. And when I wiggled my toes, this thing would sort of jingle jangle around. Anyway, there was no way I was getting it out. The barb was just ridiculous. Would have ripped my own spleen out with it, probably. So we got an ambulance. Chris had to go up to the phone box on his bike, because we went down there on bikes. There's no mobiles then. This is about 1986, probably. And so Chris eventually got an ambulance down the lake. They've come walking around all these muddy paths, got me into some sort of seated stretcher, got me to the hospital, and there they took some x-rays and cut it out. I've still got a little scar now, but that was a pretty bad one. And the other one that comes to mind, can I tell you two, or is that two, or are you right with that? Do you want another one? There was a lake I was fishing out in Oxfordshire, and it only had four carp in it, and I'd seen them, so I knew how many there was, and no one had ever caught any of them. And I was making it a bit of a mission to try and catch these fish, and I got a bit of a campaign going, I got a spot baited, and there was no swims whatsoever. It had never been fished, this pit. It's about 20 acres, and I was set up at the top of this high bank under the brolly. This weekend in September, and I've been putting the hemp and boiling on this spot, and trying to persuade these fish to eat something other than natural food, which was very difficult. But sometime after it got dark, about 9 o'clock in the evening or something, I've had a bite. Now, when you get a bite when there's only, well, any low stock venue, you know yourself, Mark, it's like, it is electrifyingly exciting. It's that, oh my God, I can't believe it's happened. And I flew out of the brolly, not expecting anything to happen. So I flew out of the brolly and I went down this embankment, which was probably a 20 foot slope, littered with gorse bushes and rabbit holes. And some way down it, I put my left foot into one of these rabbit holes, and then launched myself over the top, landing in the lake past my rods. So the next thing, I wasn't underwater. I was sat in about 2.5 foot of water, and the rod next to me is going. So I thought, if I could just get the rod. I was aware my foot was hurting, and I got the rod, and somehow managed to get this fish in, which turned out to be a tench. so I unhooked that and let it go. At that point, I realized I couldn't stand up. and I realised I'd done something quite serious. So I left the rod and the net down at the bottom and basically pulled myself up this embankment using grass roots and gorse stems. When I got to the top, I just sort of collapsed in a heap on my bed chair and took my shoe and sock off. And I mean, the pain was, it was a nine, you know, it was really, really bad. And over my foot just exploded. It just ballooned up. It just, puffed up, went purple, and I had a whole pack of anodine, and the pain was just so bad. And I thought, well, I'm not going home. I've got a rod on a prepaid spot. Or I might have even still had two rods on a prepaid spot, but I had rods out, and I thought, I've got to just stay. I can't go. And I went the whole night just slowly munching my way through this packet of anodine extra, and it just about managed to keep me from almost passing out with pain in the morning. This is a bit of a weird one, actually. I don't know why this was, but the next morning, my girlfriend came down to rescue me because she was brilliant, but she came with Ian Paul. Now, I know Ian reasonably well, and I know he did fish in the Oxford area a bit. I can only think that he must have texted me that evening and I told him what had happened or something. And anyway, or maybe he was having an affair with my girlfriend while I was fishing, but I think that's a bit more unlikely. But so yeah, Ian and my girlfriend, they came down the farmer's track, came around the field and got me to hospital. And it wasn't actually broken. It was worse than that. It was all, done all of the tendons in my ankle, and they plaster cast it. It takes a lot longer to heal and a lot more physio than a break, and the pain was off the scale. So yeah, there's a couple of fishing accidents that you don't want to have. There you go.
He always tells a good story, does Adam, doesn't he? The old baiting needle in the leg up to the hilt. Remember their old baiting needles from the 80s? I mean, a lot of them are gated these days, and they have like small micro barbs and stuff. But remember all the old hooks and baiting needles back in the day? The barb on them was huge, wasn't it?
I remember them, yes. Yeah, you can still get them. We've got some, you know, that sort of style. Not as barbaric, but we've got some. It's actually, you know, Steve Ringer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he does it with his brother. His you know, ringers, they do various bits and bobs, but they do these baiting needles, and you know what? They float.
Yeah.
They're also bright coloured, so you can find them when you drop them in the grass. Why does no one else do that?
Yeah, good shout. The Nash stuff all looks really cool, but they're all black, and then they're hard to find in your tackle box, let alone anywhere else. But, it's the first time, actually, it's made me put all my stuff back. I have like a needle box, if you know what I mean. It's like just a long box logic thing to keep stuff in, and I have to make sure I put them back in there every time I use them, which is a good habit to have, because normally I find them on my bed chair and I find them when I sit on them or something. So it's making me put them back in the box. You just put them down while you're in the middle of doing stuff, and I just can't find them. But yeah, and obviously the old twisted ankle, or well, he did his tendons and everything, his ankle. I bet there's been a few broken bones on the bank, isn't there? Going back to what we said about being stranded, I mean, you've normally got a load of fishing gear with you that's, you know, that's been a struggle to even get to the swim. And I always used to think as a kid, like, you know, if something really bad happened, you couldn't pack up yourself because you got really ill or broke a bone or whatever, like, could you trust somebody else to pack your fishing gear, or maybe somebody that doesn't know where everything goes or how the rods go together, or maybe even a non-angler? You know, it's like the thought of somebody else having to pack my gear up for me or leaving bits behind, or I was just a sort of daydream about that, thinking, oh god, what would I do if, you know, this happened or whatever. I don't know. Yeah, your gear ever been packed up by anyone else because of some sort of incident?
It's not, no. In fact, the only time I can remember it recently is, I think I'll give a mention, you know, my old pal Scott Oakley packed an old fella's gear up and helped him out after he'd suffered a stroke on the bank.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that. Yeah, I think I'd pack somebody else's gear up okay, but just trusting someone else to pack my gear up. But
sure. I really wouldn't trust anybody. I mean, my wife's just been away camping, and she, you know, she borrowed bloody bed chair, sleeping bag, Ridge Monkey stove, and I was fretting over that. I don't know why.
I finally bought a new stove recently. I've been like 2 years without a decent stove. I ended up getting a Coleman on recommendation of Kevin Nash, one of the really old black ones, and it was great for two sessions and didn't use it for a while, and then I just couldn't get it going again. And it's not like the old Colemans where you can work out to take off the generators. Like the older ones, I can't work out to do it. Or I couldn't find a replacement for it anyway, because they're like different, they've got bits at each end. And then ended up making do on them cheap 10 quid ones that use the weird gas, you know, use the like pounder tin gas that's sometimes you see them everywhere and then you can't get any. And then I was doing a bit of fishing where, you know, I was on a lodge down at Kevin Nash's and using the cooker in there, and all of a sudden I just found myself not having a proper stove. But yeah, I scoured Amazon, ended up getting is it called Boolin or something like that? Don't know. Seems to be quite a decent one. Looks like a Tracker one. And I finally have a stash of gas and stove. But we're not talking about stoves. We're talking about injuries. So should we find somebody else? Who haven't we had yet?
Ian. I was going to say Ian Russell, another one of my favourite storytellers.
Let's get Ian on.
Your worst fishing injury you've ever sustained?
Bloody hell. Can I talk about an injury that I didn't sustain but nearly did?
You can do.
Because I've been quite lucky. Broke my ankle on a building site when I was younger. And other than that, God, I'm going to rub some wood here because I've been fairly ailment free. But what nearly happened to me on Summer Leach when we fished there, very few carp, very big lake when we initially joined it. We had big boats that we could use. Well, I was baiting an area off an island with a friend of mine called May, and he was standing on the bank. I was loading the buckets, 10-kilo buckets into this boat, to row out to the island. He was holding onto some willow frounds, so he was on the far end of the boat. The near end of the boat, clearly, self-explanatory, is against the bank. I've looked over his shoulder. I'm not in the boat, Matt is, okay? Excuse me. I'm looking over his shoulder about 70 yards away. I've seen a big bat come out of the water and a carp, and I jokingly shouted at him, "Whoa, carp ahoy," run down the bank, leapt into the big boat, which catapulted Matt about 30 foot up in the air with two buckets of 10 kilos of spotted. The boat went over the top of my head and landed next to me with a thump so hard on the surface, I swear, I was in the water now, doggy paddling, if that had hit me on the head, I'd be dead. A millisecond later, a 10 kilo bucket landed the other side of my head. Matty was floundering around, laughing his head off, and then the third object come down and landed on the boat. So that was very lucky for me, because I think if any of them three objects had hit me on the head, we wouldn't be having this conversation now. So it's not quite an accident, but by God, treat boats very carefully, because they can bite you back. But it was Matty, we laughed about it. It went on, Matt, he took his mobile phone apart, he didn't have it, he had it in his pocket. £20 notes were all under the windscreen wipers of our cars to dry from the blooming sun. When I come up, my sunglasses were all skewiffle on me face, and my baseball cap was floating across the lake. So be careful with boats, because I knew, if that had hit me on the head, who knows. But a big boat hitting the water did not make a noise.
I can imagine, that's...
Well, when we got out, I was crying with laughter because of the scene. Probably a slight bit of shock, actually, because boat going over and Matty in the air, he went airborne. He was like a little airline pilot. I thought it was highly amusing, but when we sat and thought about it, what a stupid, stupid thing to do. But by then, you've done it and you learn not to do it again, didn't you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, imagine if that was nowadays when everyone's filming everything they do and someone has actually got it on camera.
Oh my God, yeah. That was. as long as it went the right way, like it did, yeah. It would have been okay, wouldn't it? But then big boats, and I'll face something, and when it slapped the surface about a foot to the bottom of my head, and at the time, I didn't. It was only when you evaluate your leg, you think, bloody hell, if that had hit me on the head, there's no way. It'd kill you, wouldn't it? And just splat your head open. But that was a close. I mean, I've had lots of close calls, but that is the closest that could have been. But I'm never surprised it wasn't. I've had loads of hooks in my hand, in my head. I had a mate, we were down to Kennet years ago. I know I'm waffling now, but years ago, I was down there with a good friend of mine, Bob Cohen, and we're trotting for chub, and he's cast his stick float out. It's come across my face, and I've now got a size 18 hook in the end of my nose with two casters on it, and I can see them. So I'm like, boss-eyed. He has looked at me and just nearly had to go to hospital with laughter. And I'm thinking, well, this is amazing. I've got a barbed size 18 or whatever it is sticking out right on the very tip of my nose. Two bloody cars to stick it off. So if anything's going to make you go boss-eyed, Mark, trust me, that will do it. So, again, cars cool. But most people have them, don't they? I've got mates that fell out of trees, fell off boats, blah, 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 like a whole car accident on the way to the lake. So many different things. But, they're always going to happen, aren't they? You've got sharp objects, heavy objects, and imbeciles in charge of them, like myself, most of the time. So there you go. And when you see a fish, nothing else in the world is happening for you, is it? It's all you can see is that blooming fish you're reeling in, putting another bag on, and you haven't taken your eye off that fish the whole thing. So many accidents are about to happen, but thankfully most of the time they don't, Mark. So
yeah, and
there you go, new died.
I bet there's a few boating mishaps. It's not as common in the UK, is it, people using boats to fish? So maybe you've heard less of him, but I remember there was a chap on Fendrate, and I wasn't there, but it was when my mate Dave, for his shout out to him the fourth time this time, he was there, and there was a guy. He had one of those, like, if you're boat fishing, you're using any sort of boat that you're going to do a bit more than baiting up in, i.e. you've got a motor on it, you've got a leisure battery in it, maybe you use it to move swims, all your gear in it, then you need a boat of a certain size and bigger, and you want to use like the catamaran styles where they've got like a twin hub and then twin sort of side bits. You know what a catamaran looks like with the two bits that touch the water with a gap in between. Well, like all the sort of decent boats are built like that. Even like the Bic 252 is probably the smallest boat I would use for a motor and equipment and stuff. But Bic do a smaller boat. It's a bit more like a rubber dub thing. I forget what it's called now. A lot of people use them just for baiting up. There's a couple of people use them on Stone Acres when I fish there, which is a boating lake. Anyway, there used to be a rule on Fendrate, and you don't go out and chase waders because of this particular mishap. This guy's gone out. He's got
That's
to the
common island. Sense, really.
Yeah, he's got to the island. He's tipped over the front of this boat. He's stood in the front. I think he's leaning over either to find a spot or tip some bait or something. Anyway, the boat's gone over his head. He's gone in, and it's filled up. His chesties are filled up with water. I forget what happened. He didn't die, but I forget what happened, whether somebody went out there and rescued him. I think they did. I think somebody spotted him. But I was on Cavagnac when I made the DVD on there, the Carping Knowledge or French Knowledge, whichever one it was, many years ago. And they had like half sort of Bic 252s, and half the boats were these things that were... They were like a typical boat, just one sort of hull, not the twin catamaran style, and they were very rounded at the front, which same thing, it meant it, you know, if you leant forward at the front of the boat, like there was quite a distance for the boat to move before the sort of pointy front of it went, you know, touched the water's edge. Very, very unsafe, I think. Anyway, there was an old guy who was in the next swim to me to the left. It was on our first day when we got there, so he's obviously looking for spots and stuff. I was stood in the front of my swim, and I just looked over to the left. Everyone's getting settled, basically, all over the lakes. We've all just arrived. And I seen this guy, and he was oldish. He was 60s plus. And I seen him, like, kneel over the front of the boat, and it was all in slow motion. I could see what happened. The boat tipped up behind him, and... basically just he somersaulted out the front of the boat as the boat tipped up and then landed on top of him, so but upside down on top of him, so he's like under it. I'm just like, oh my god, that guy's dead. Like, if the boat's knocked him out unconscious or something, then he's underwater. So I'm screaming across to the like the cafe bit, David, because he's got a motorboat over there with a super fast engine, you know, like a proper seagoing thing. I'm like, David is in the water, because he's an old boy as well. Anyway, fortunately the boat didn't hit him. He was like kind of in a pocket, in like an air pocket underneath the boat, and then he must have swimmed out from underneath, because I just see his head bob up at the side of the boat. But he was still struggling, obviously. He was fully clothed and whatever, didn't have chesties on. But yeah, I was like, wow, that was a bit naughty. So yeah, be very careful when choosing a boat, and never lean over the front of the boat, because it's like It's the weakest point, I think. But yeah, there's definitely a few mishaps to be had. There was a very sad one, a guy called Marky Mark on New Year's Eve. Him and a friend died on Raysbury, if you remember. Fell out of a boat in the night somewhere, and they must have had what they call it, toxic shock or whatever, where the cold water stops your heart. They were both found dead the following day, sadly. So be super careful when using boats. Always use a life jacket. And pick the type of boat. If you're going to do some, you know, fishing the syndicate, or you're doing some proper boat fishing, then, or if you're going abroad for the first time, then you need a bit of practice in a boat, I think. Sorry to be sad. Who have we got left? I reckon we've not had Briggsy yet, have we?
No, or Lee Jackson.
Ooh, should we go for?
Should Flip we go a for? Coin.
I mean, luckily, I've had no real serious fishing injuries in my time of carp fishing. Otherwise, other than the normal ones of getting hooks stuck in your hand and things like that, you know, I did once. I must admit, I wasn't actually fishing, but I was attending a barbecue at the lake. But I was, because of the barbecue, I was completely unable to cast me rods out because I got so drunk, and you know, and. Like you do, but I didn't put any fish in danger because I didn't cast out, and completely unable. And I can remember waking up at some point in the night, soaking wet. But I still had my head in the sleeping bag, and I thought, this is uncomfortable, and you know, I must have gone back to sleep. And the next time I woke up, by which time I'd sobered up quite a lot, I was actually in the lake. So I'd rolled off of the bed chair and into the lake, and you know, so yeah, that could have been a little bit, you know, a little bit more dangerous than what it was. And on another occasion, again, yeah, when I was fishing the Faversham at the school pool, you know, there was a pub wandered along to the local windmill pub for a couple of beers and everything. And in them days, I just couldn't, you know. The lager they used to sell down there was Earlyman's, and we used to call it Hooligans, because if you had about four pints of it, you was guaranteed to fall over. And I can remember leaving the pub, you know, because I felt a little bit sick and everything, and wandering along the road to the lake. My head was working, but my legs weren't. And I got to the bit, the corner, like it was February time, it was really, really cold as well, you know, and I was just in a T-shirt, and I can remember thinking to myself, right, the path narrows down here a little bit, so I've got to watch what I'm doing here. And all of a sudden I just fell over in the bushes, and I thought, this is quite comfortable, so I went off to sleep. And then again, I woke up again, and I thought, I've just got to try and get a bit further. And I fell over in the bushes again and went to sleep again. And the third time I woke up, I was absolutely smothered in frost and considerably sober by now, you know. So I went back around to my swim and managed to get in my sleeping bag. And then Paul Forward turned up, and I said to him, I've only just got back, Jacko. I've only just got back, he said. And he started killing himself with laughing. He said, do you know what time it is? Bear in mind, I'd left the pub at about 10:30 in the evening. It was like 3:00 in the morning. And they'd had afters. that could have been a little bit more dangerous than what it was. And, luckily it was. And just one other, I mean, the worst time I've ever had hook caught in my hand was at Connybrook. I was just putting my rod bag, and I'll use a quiver, just put that back into the back of my van, and one of the hooks went in my hand, and so I'm attached to a quiver, and holding it at Ra's length, and arm's length as well, so I had to wander around the lake holding this quiver out, and there's only one guy on the lake, and he was right around the other side. I had to wander around to him and ask him to cut the line so I could rid myself of the quiver, you know. But that's it. But other than that, there's been no serious things, and I'm not really seeing anything happen seriously other than the same similar sort of incidents with the hooked in hands and things like that. That I've never seen anyone else, you know, suffer the same, anything different.
Yes, being highly inebriated on the bank, I'm guessing that's caused a fair few injuries as well. What do you reckon?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, like the I've not really heard about the falling off your bed chair in your sleeping bag so drunk and rolling into the lake.
That's potentially dangerous, that.
But yeah, very dangerous, not to mention you're getting a wet sleep. But although you probably, if you're that drunk, you probably don't care. But yeah, barbecue injuries as well. I'm sure barbecues have been responsible for a few burns and stuff.
Yeah, I remember remember the Woolpack when we got one of these disposable ones that was struggling to get going. So I don't know if it was you or myself. He thought a bit of a splash of unleaded would help it along.
was that not Elstow 2? Me, you, and Paul Harris. So we had a petrol incident there, didn't we?
I don't know. Did we?
Yeah, and that one where we got the pictures from with Paul, me and you, and the white picnic table that used to be up there on that little barbecue point. Yeah, and then we were pouring unleaded straight out the bloody container on top of the barbecue. So it was not very wise. We ended up having to boot it into the bushes. Yes, be safe out there, kids. Be very safe.
Yes, do what we say, not what we do.
Yes, very much so. So that was Jacko. Let's wind this up with Briggsy.
Well, injuries as such, I mean, the best one example I can think of is not actually me, but my partner Joan. I've had different little mishaps, you know, falling over. I think I possibly broke my thumb once, but that was about it. But there was a time down at Cassian, we used to go down to Cassian every winter, most of December, and for the Christmas. And, you know, it involved moving around the lake quite a bit to find the fish. Or you'd, you know, fish an area for a week, there'd be fish there, and then they'd move on. So you'd have to move on yourself and, you know, get on the fish again. So, you know, this was one of those trips. It had got to sort of late December. We'd been fishing an area. The takes had dried up, so we loaded up the boats and moved down the North Arm where we was fishing. And we got to near the main bridge and pulled into a swim called the First Point. And always what used to happen, we'd pull up in the swim, I'd start unloading the gear, and Joan used to wander around just around the pathways. You know, we used to look for wild boar and things like that, or the prints where they'd been, or, you know, just sort of having a look around the area, really, you know, new swim and so forth. So anyway, you know, I started setting up all the gear and everything, and I thought, she, you know, she's a long time. And eventually I heard someone calling and sort of peered, you know, right further down the bank, and there she was laying on the banks. So I got in the boat and went round to where she was, and she'd fallen down the rocks and broken her leg. I mean, we didn't know at the time, although we guessed it, but she was in a lot of pain. So I got her in the boat, we got back to the swim, and she said, look, you know, I'm not going to hospital, I'm not going home or anything, just we'll bandage it up, you know, I'll be all right and all that. So, well, fair enough, you know, I didn't want to leave. So anyway, you know, we was in this new swim, and nothing was happening. You know, I'd been there, you know, about 4 or 5 days. This is 4 or 5 days after it happened, and we hadn't had a bite or anything, but we couldn't really move because she was in too much pain. So anyway, it got to the 2nd of January, and the new permits were due, and I knew what the guard Depeche were like on there, you know, they're really keenies. So I said to her, you know, I'm going to have to go and get the new permits. I'll prop you up on a bucket, we haven't had a bite for a week, it's going to be fine. And I'll go and get the permits. So off I went, you know, it involved a boat ride back to where a car was, up to the shops and then back, but all in all, you know, about an hour. So anyway, I'm coming back under the bridge, you know, 45 minutes later. It's a really cold, miserable sort of January day, and peering across, you know, I mean, it's a long way across the lake, so I could only sort of just see her when I first sort of noticed something, and I thought, she's sitting in the lake. I thought, no, surely not. And as I'm getting closer, I thought, she's in the lake. And so you can guess what happened. You know, I'd literally just left, gone under the bridge, out of sight. One of the rods has gone off. And so she's had to sort of hobble, scramble down the bank, hooked into this fish, looked around, the landing net's up the bank, so she's had to sort of shuffle back, get the net, and the only way she could actually sort of net the fish was to sort of get into the margins. So she's got into the margins and netted this fish. It was a 41, I remember the weight, 41-12 mirror, which was her biggest fish at the time. And then she couldn't move because she's got the fish in the net and the rod and everything. And so she had to just sit in the lake until I come back. And luckily, I wasn't too long. And she, yeah, like I say, you know, 41-12, it was her personal best. Sorted her out, dried her out. And we actually stayed on the lake for 2 weeks after she had done it. Sure enough, we got home, took her straight to the hospital then. Yeah, sure enough, she had broken her leg. She was in plaster for 3 months. The doctors all had a right go at her. You know, they really had a go at her because she ended up with a blood clot and all sorts, you know, which it was such a dangerous thing to do. But, you know, that was what Cassian sort of means to us. She couldn't even better leave it with a broken leg. But yeah, there we go. It wasn't my injury, but it was you know, one of the best I've seen.
Yeah, I don't think there's many that can top that. That is never going to be forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, she's the toughest person I've ever known. Do you know what I mean? Imagine breaking your leg and then staying there for another 2 weeks because you don't want to leave the lake.
Yeah, so we did get a broken bone story, Briggsy. Yeah, that's a broken bone on the bank. I mean, that's usually the end of your session, isn't it?
Yeah, but not in the case of Joan, tough old woman.
Yeah, very much so. And a big fish as well.
Yeah, happy days. Well, almost.
Yeah, I've not broke too many bones in my life. I've done my ribs. Collarbone was a pretty bad one, actually. Wasn't fishing related, but yeah, that wasn't very.
That was when you thought that you'd become the middle aged BMX bandit.
Yeah, on a mountain bike on a BMX track. Yeah, that was not a favourable time of my life. I still suffer for that now, such as I can't sleep on my side, which I need to sleep on my side to fall asleep, but I end up waking up half a dozen times a night. Yeah, not good. Punctured lungs, broken ribs, broken collarbone. I don't advise that, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, but the worst thing, how many people saw you do it?
Yeah, a load of kids that I was racing. And my mate who's following me. What
was worse, the injury or the embarrassment?
Oh, I didn't care about the embarrassment. I was in that much agony. Yeah, I didn't care. But yeah, before that's the end of the injuries, you'll be pleased to know we've got a few scary stories coming up. But right now we're recording this just after spawning time. Most lakes have spawned. There's a few that are currently closed. You got any post-spawning tips, Mark?
Yeah, leave the buggers alone if they're still spawning. I have seen several things on Facebook of... You know, not necessarily people fishing for spawning fish, although that had been mentioned, but people saying outright they got down to the lake, the fish were all spawning at one end, so they fished at the other. No, just don't fish at all. You're going to catch a fish that's just, you know, emptied its load up the other end. It's knackered. You know, it's hungry. You might, you know, there's a good chance of you catching it, but leave them alone. Let them recover first. You know, the lakes that do shut for a couple of weeks after spawning, I've got it right. Even if I turned up and didn't know it was shut, you've got to understand that. Just leave them alone for a bit. But when they do, when lakes do open, a couple of weeks has passed, it's time to use every last bit of bait you've got, because they will eat it. They will be on a big, big munch. You had some big post-spawning hits of a bait?
Yeah, definitely, and it's the time of year as well. You know the old salt craze? I'm led to believe by a few people that know their stuff that that's the time of year to be putting salt in your particle mix, spod mix, you know, rock salt. You can pre-salt your boilies in rock salt water, but apparently it's a very good time post-spawning to be putting salt out. And yeah, I've had a few post-spawning hits. I don't know if I've ever had a mega hit pre-spawning. You know, like that, you know, when they group up, but they're not quite spawning yet, but they're kind of there ready, and somebody somewhere on, yeah, I've known many people over the years that have had those big hits, you know, a couple of weeks before spawning, where they're, you know, they're starting to group up and stuff. You know, and they have after lakes, big fish in one session. Seems to be Duffer's Week, as we call it these days. But I don't know if I've ever dropped really lucky like that. I think I've definitely had some post-spawning. I like it when spawning's out the way and the fish start to act normal. You know, you give them that few weeks to recover. So, because they are definitely at the highest sort of stress levels of the year. You know, most fish deaths occur after spawning, doesn't it? So the less stress you can give them, the better. But, you know, once the lake settle back down again, the fish start spreading out again, they've not got, you know, procreating on their minds. It's a good time of year to be fishing. Just the weights aren't great, obviously. You know, I don't tend to fish any sort of serious waters through the summer. Just fish places for fun to get bites and whatever. And then start my serious fishing September again, usually, which when my daughter was younger, it used to be school holidays. So, you know, I quite often didn't fish a lot July, August. And then, you know, once the fish started putting the weight back on again, come early September, I'd start my campaign on whatever lake I'm fishing, fish through, you know, sort of September, October, November, as a rule. And it's a good time of year because you start getting the bait out, can't you? Yeah. It's when you can definitely give it to him.
Yeah, but let's look at the other aspect that is affecting a lot of places this time of year. Weed.
Yes. I think we do know now, you know, people used to be scared to fish in weed. It was all about fishing for the clear spot, looking for the clear spots, fishing in them. But I messed up that many chances looking for... looking for gaps when I've seen fish, I've moved, it's been to a swim, I've not known, I've ended up leading about trying to find something presentable. But obviously these days we can either just bang a chod into it, or just bang a big bag, or that parachute rig. Have you seen people using that, like a big long 2 foot hook link? Get a PVA bag and don't perforate it, put a couple of bits of foam in it on a long hook link, and it will, once the water starts to penetrate, and it will drop down slowly after you've cast out. Looks a bit weird when you cast it out. Got to be careful you don't pull the lead off with the resistance from the bag. So you need a lead clip that's not going to drop the lead very easily, or a helicopter rig. It's probably a better way to fish it.
I think the style of where you cast as well helps a lot with that. I mean, you know yourself with having fish sticks, you let it just all land in the water, then your lead's going to come off with the resistance of the bag. Just before it hits the water, you either hit the clip or just trap the line, so it's kind of all under tension and straightens out and lands in a line, so you're not creating that resistance, and then you just feel it to the bottom.
Yeah, exactly. It's surprising still many people don't use a clip when they're fishing, and don't do that, but it definitely helps with presentation. You hit that clip nicely, just before the lead touches the water, it straightens everything out. You can feel the lead a lot better down to the bottom. But yeah, certainly my tip at the minute. But yeah, don't be scared to fish in the weed. There are many rigs available to us now. I'd never been a massive PVA bag angler, but especially if you're fishing extreme range, you know, like the furthest range you can possibly cast, there's no better way than having like a 2.5 ounce lead, load of everything inside a bag on a short braided hook link, a load of pellet inside, so the whole thing's weighing like 4 ounce, and you can launch that, make the bag nice and round, really pack it tight, lick and fold the corners in so it's a perfect round ball, and you can blast it to the horizon, and you don't need to stop it with a clip. You can let it land wherever it lands, and it's fishing. And remember the two Welsh guys, was it Mike Jones and Ash guys, used to fish horseshoe like that, and they've devastated a few waters, because surprised how far you can cast when there's no separate lead and hook bait. It's just a round ball weighing about 4 ounce. It goes further than you can ever cast just a lead on its own. If you can cast 130 normally, it will probably go 150, because there's just no resistance, it's just a ball. And you can just let it land anywhere. You don't need to stop it. You don't need to have a clip. You just blast it as far as you can. You ever tried that method, Mark?
Not really for range, although going back, I remember my first ever fish out of Icon. This is back when there was hardly any fish in it. And I'd got down there early one morning. I'd been rolling bait in the evening. It was the middle of the summer, and I'd been staying up that late rolling bait. It was starting to get light again, so I was like, oh, sod it, I'm going fishing. I got down to the lake, absolutely shattered, got two rods out onto the clear spots on the bar, and on the third one, and I just want to go to bed. I could see a weed bed about 40 yards out, and I thought, right, I'm just going to type a solid bag and throw it in the middle of that. And that was as much as thought that I was put into it, and guess what?
It went.
It rattled off. It was only a double figure common, but it was my first fish after 20 odd nights.
Yeah. Fish love the weed, don't ignore it.
Yeah, also just that one take, it gives you confidence to do it again and again.
Definitely. Well, let's move on. Let's go to the scary stories. Who would you like to hear first?
Oh, I don't know. Let's say from Chile.
Have I ever been scared on the bank? Can I just ask you one question before I go on? Are you going to ask me if I've ever been embarrassed on the bank?
No, that's not in there. Right. We might put it in though. It's give me an idea.
Yeah, I think you should throw that in because I had an absolute belter. I'm going to tell you this story because I wasn't necessarily scared, but I thought the people might ring up the authorities and I would get myself banned. I'm not a scared kind of guy, you know. I sat at Rainbow in a thunderstorm where, not for 1 second in about 14 or 15 hours, wasn't there a lightning bolt in the sky. Pascal came round and asked me, he told everybody really, and I didn't want to do it. I had my little Evo hideout, no grain sheet, I never used anything like that, no cover, and it was getting lifted, there were torrents of water coming through, and I absolutely loved it. That's what fishing is all about to me. I've never really had any incidents with people either, but one day when I was at Frimley chasing Charlie's mate, I take right in the bottom of my gear an item of tackle, if you want to call it, called an entrenching tool, which we used to obviously dig trenches with in the army, and I take it fishing. Now the last thing, you know, you get to a fishery and you see people who do their business in the bushes and leave toilet paper everywhere and all the rest of it, just the most disgusting human beings going, you know, you've got a bit of respect for your environment. But anyway, I walked over the back, there's a little stream at the back of the double boards, and went about 30 yards out into a very soft sort, it's not even a field, it's all sort of, there's a few trees and whatever, and you do get a lot of deer there. And I found the perfect spot. I dug myself a little hole, and I did my business in said hole, and with the paperwork completed, I stood up to pull my trousers up, and behind me were probably 15 yards away were two ladies and a bloke with clipboards and binoculars and all the rest of it. And I didn't know what to say for 5 seconds. I just looked at them, and my pants, I just got my pants up, and my shorts are still around my ankles, and I stared at them, and all I could think of, I just put my hand up and, good morning! Pulled my pants up, and I ran like crazy back over the little street, and I sat there, and I thought what was going to happen. They would ring the management, and I'd get... I'd probably get thrown off the fishery, and I must admit I was a little bit scared, but ultimately nothing was said, and I did find out later they were doing a survey on the deer. They monitored the deer life over there, bless them, and I don't think for a second they expected to see a stinky old angler do his business in the middle of the field, but there you go. So yeah, if I was scared, I was just scared about losing my ticket. Crazy story.
I have, because I've got a very overactive imagination. What one shall I tell you? One's an actual ghost story. I'll tell you one that really, really freaked me out. I think this was about 2000. I've gone to cinema to see, I think, Gladiator, and me and my missus couldn't get in. It was totally sold out. So we've gone, we come all the way to cinema. What else is on? Okay, well, have a look. Now, I don't do horror films or anything like that because my imagination is just needs controlling. I don't need to be feeding it stuff. And saw this film on the billboard, and it was it's called Past Eight. Oh, this one, it's starting in 5 minutes' time. She's going to say, what's it called? The Blair Witch Project. Right, okay, well, we're just going to see what it's about. So we've gone in, mate. Well, Jesus Christ, it was the most... I know some people say it's not scary, but I think if you're willing just to let reality slide and just go with it, it is genuinely terrifying, especially the ending. I mean, my God. In fact, I don't know why I'm talking about this now. I'm looking behind me, looking at the fields and the woods and everything. I mean, after we watched that, right, it traumatised me so much. This was in October it came out, I think, for Halloween or something like that. I didn't go fishing until the end of February. Didn't go fishing once because fishing involves woods and darkness. And I thought, I am coming out of my bivvy to a little pile of sticks, like in the film, if anyone's seen it. And I thought, it really, really freaked me out. And at the end of it, so I hadn't been, we had quite a warm winter that year. But I didn't go. I might have done a couple of day trips. And at the end of it, I mean, bearing in mind, I'm 30-year-old man, right? So I should know better. And, at the end, it was sort of the end of February, and Lainey and Reg and Keith Jenkins were fishing on Hunt's Corner, and they said, "Oh, come up and have a social. We're gonna." This is when I remember they had all these chopping boards and spice racks and everything. Now we're gonna cook a. Reggie's gonna cook a Thai. Lainey said, "I'm going to cook a curry," and Jenkins is cooking Chinese or something. So I thought, flipping it, this is going to be special. So I've got up there. Now I'm thinking, right, I haven't been fishing. The nights are long and dark. I haven't been fishing since last September, October time because I was too scared. So I've gone to the lake, walked up to the lake. Now they've all got there before me, and it's pretty much stitched up. But there was, I'm walking around, and I'm thinking, well, I ain't going down the other end on my own. There's no way I'm fishing on my own. I'm still traumatized 6 months later, right? So I've gone round, and there's this little gap in between the bushes in between Lainey and Keith Jenkins. And I'm like, it's all right if I just pitch up here, chaps, just flick a couple of rods in. Penners, what are you talking about? Look, he's got a rod down here. Look, you'll have to do it. Just go over there and fish from the point. Bring your sander box round and we'll have a nice social. I'm thinking, well, yeah, I'm cool with all that. But what happens at the end of it when I've got to go back to my bivvy? And anyway, we did. We had a great social, loads of lovely food. Eventually, they told me to leave because I didn't want to leave. And they're like, well, we're going to bed now. I was thinking, oh, should we just stay a bit longer? Yes, have another speckled den and sit and talk a bit more around the campfire. And eventually, I had to go back to my bivvy and I've walked. And it was about 200 yards away and it was blowing hooly. And all the trees were fucking, they're flipping, the tips of the twigs were scraping the roof of my bivvy. And I'm lying there and the big moon's up and there's clouds scudding across it. And I was just hearing things all night. I zipped my door down, which I never do, and I laid there, unable to sleep, totally terrified that somehow I was going to get murdered by the Blair Witch on Hunt's Corner in Oxford with three of my good mates 200 yards away. So, yeah, there was that. I won't tell you the ghost story because that's a bit of a long one, but I have been scared a few times on the bank.
Have you seen the Blair Witch Project, Mark?
No, I've... kind of put it on while I've been pottering around and not taking a great deal of notice of it, to be honest. So I can't say I've really sat and watched it all. But I know the gist of it. Have you sat there in the dark, clutching your popcorn?
Well, I hadn't watched it for years. I'm not really into horror films because I think most of the horror films, the suspension of disbelief, as they call it, they're usually too far-fetched for me to sort of buy into or get scared. So I'd never really watched the Blair Witch Project. I've ignored it when it's come on telly loads of times. Anyway, it was only last year or the year before. Mrs. was out somewhere, and I think Megan was out as well. And I've gone to bed, whatever time, like 11 midnight or something, and it's come on one of the channels. I just flicked the telly on. So I started to watch it from the start, and I tell you what, it made my heart race a few times. Like, it's more jumpy than scary, if you know what I mean. There's a lot of sudden heart, but I defy anybody to say, I was really impressed with it actually, because it was all shot on like the whole movie camera and stuff, and it was like, you never think it's real, but it worked on a level of shocking, frightening, jumping type level. And I'll tell you what, at the end of the film like that, when you're sat in on your own in a dark bedroom, you were thinking things. So I imagine if I went fishing straight after that and I was spooky in the woods, or let's say I'd have been in that exact same scenario watching it on my iPad late at night in the bivvy where I'm on a lake on my own. Now, we've done a lot of fishing on our own, haven't we, where like fishing low stock lakes, and you quite often, you know, especially midway, you're the only one on sometimes, and you know, I've fished on places where I'm not really supposed to be, or just lakes that are genuinely spooky, you know, there's nobody around. The sort of Colmere type places that I've fished over the years, and if I'd have watched something like that, if I'd have watched that film knowing how I felt after it, and then I was sat on a lake like that, it wouldn't have been a comfortable night. I mean, I've had a few scary sort of things, but when I was younger, you know, you're like fishing on your own at night and you're 15, 14, 16, whatever, and it doesn't take a lot to like work yourself up, you know, a few noises here and there. Especially if you're not on somewhere that's totally secure, you know, you're locked in. A lot of lakes are comfortable these days, fenced and gated, and you know, you need a key to get in and whatever. But sometimes when you're out kind of on your own in the middle of nowhere, if I'd have watched a film like The Blair Witch Project, then I think it'd have been an uncomfortable night. But are you into horror films?
I love them. Love them, the horror. The only thing is, it gets a bit boring, to be honest. You know, there's only so many things you can do, and I think the bar has been pushed so much with things like The Human Centipede, which is just, it's not even a good film, it's just shock.
Yeah.
And then you watch some of the old ones. I watched the first Hellraiser film with Pinhead and his Cenobites. I seen that one not so long back again, and well, the special effects are just not that special anymore. But what do you think? I'm looking forward to the remake of Alien.
Yeah.
You've seen that has come out. I really, really enjoyed the original Alien films.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's nowhere near as good as the original. I don't. From the horror connoisseurs I read on Twitter and stuff, yeah, they're all pretty disappointed with the new one, but going back to what Chilly said, you know, the old getting scared by natural phenomena such as, I don't know, like, you know, a storm or electrical storm or getting flooded out of a lake. I mean, have you ever woke up knee deep in water, you know, with the water lapping around your bed chair or anything like that?
No, I haven't done a night on Willington when that was flooding, but I kind of knew it was flooding. I was kind of set up really well back, you know, about a good on the road bank, actually on the road, which, you know, is a good, you know, 5 foot or so above the water level.
Yeah, I think a few of the times I've been scared actually on the bank has been because of things like that. So it's either wind, you know, like when you're in a real storm, the wind takes your bivvy off. I mean, it's going back to a bit of that feeling of having somebody else pack your gear up. I get that same sort of nauseating feeling when the elements are like, you know, they're borderline, you're going to lose your bivvy or whatever. You know, you must have been there in the night where, middle of the night, you're holding onto your bivvy, you're trying to pack all your stuff up in case you lose it, so, you know, everything doesn't blow in it everywhere. You're like bagging everything up in your rucksack or your case or whatever while trying to hold onto the bivvy. But they're some of the most frightening nights, I think, you know, when it's like natural elements. And Dead Man's Lake in Manchester, that can flood. What happens is like a backwater that comes off the River Mersey, and when the Mersey floods, the backwater, the lake normally runs into this little backwater at the back of Dead Man's, and then the backwater runs into the Mersey. But when the Mersey's in flood, it all reverses. The Mersey comes into the backwater, and then the backwater pushes back into the lake. And then occasionally, when it's really bad, the pressure of the water coming from the little stream actually blows up and makes like it pumps water out the ground like 10 foot high, and then the lake fills up. And when the lake starts, it's like a 10 acre lake. And when the lake fills up, it you can wake up in the night and the water, if the water's coming back in by morning, all the swims are flooded. Like there's only like 5 swims on one bank. All down one side, it's like a sort of longish rectangle, and you cast it halfway or to the far margins or whatever. So you fish down one side, and it's fairly flat. So when the lake comes up, all of a sudden there's 2 foot of water, you know, your buzzers can be under the water by the time you wake up. And yeah, normally you get some sort of indication, like, you know, your bobbins are bleeping or whatever, because the water's like, you know, level with your alarms. But normally at that point the water is around the water's around your bed chair. And there's no worse thing than especially if you're caught out by it and you don't know it's going to flood, and you wake up and yeah, everything's floating around you. It's a fairly scary concept, packing up. You know you're getting drenched, there's no two ways about it. You've probably got to walk 400 yards through wading this stuff. You've not got time to pack your gear up because it's already floating around. Yeah, it's not the one. Yeah, flooding's probably one of the most uncomfortable, scary thoughts on lakes.
Yeah, definitely. But you've just got to be aware of what's coming. I remember fishing on this shallow lagoon at St Ives a few years back, and that the shallow is the very, very last one of the lakes on there to flood, with the likes of Longreach or the Lagoon being the first. I think the Lagoon's the first to go, with that chub stream around the back of it. It's like an offcut of the Great Ouse. And there's ditches that run either side of Longreach. They flood, then flood into Longreach. Then when the ditches get really, really high, they flood into the Meadows, the Stake Pit and Fjords. They're the joined lakes. And then, only then, well, it flooded to the shallow lagoon. I was fishing the shallow lagoon while this was all flooded. So I've had a walk around Longreach. I've walked up the path, you know, and it's I've made the decision thinking, no, weather looks good, I'm going to stay. And the shallow didn't flood, but I've got to be honest, I was I didn't sleep much that night. You know, I wouldn't say I was scared. I was more thinking, am I being a bit daft? But
the problem is when the weather's like that, it's usually pretty carpy, isn't it? Either like gale force winds and you're going to lose your bivvy, or, you know, sort of overcast, heavy rain, stormy. You know, it's usually sort of good fishing conditions, so you kind of want to be there. But yeah, it's not good. They're the most scary times. Let's find out what scares Ian McMillan.
Have you ever been scared on the bank while fishing? UFOs.
You know what? Yeah, it's one thing. It's just Fox Pool related again. Yeah. It wasn't scared. It was more in what the bloody hell is that going on?
Yeah.
But I was filming again with Len. Obviously not in the dark. We were bivvied up next to each other in a swimming called the Noddies, and you could hear these the most bizarre noises. It was something off of a bloody Steven Spielberg film. Really horrible. It was just somebody being murdered within 10 yards of us.
Yeah.
We were standing for about 20 minutes listening to this and looking at each other. It's like, just what? I've never heard it before, nor Len. And Len's obviously got years on me and years of being on the bank. Well, we went hunting with the Corks and we found two hedgehogs doing what they do to make little hedgehogs. But I kid you not, mate, I was crying and laughing. They didn't stop, by the way. We obviously did it very carefully. But the noises, Mark, if you was in your bivvy on your own in the pitch black, you'd have cooked yourself. It's like, what the heck? It's a wild hog or something. Yeah. But it was two hedgehogs on the floor doing the do. There you go. How scary was that? There's been loads of times where you think, oh, God. You know, Hampton caught on the Thames one night. We were Tags Island. There was two of us.
Yeah.
Hidden under a willow. Rod's out there. You can't see us because we shouldn't be there. We've heard, goose. Bloody hell, you wake up, it's midnight. Yeah. Not a noise other than this big badoosh, and I said to Steve, Jesus Christ, man, that cannot be a carp. That can be a dolphin.
Yeah.
Bad douche. There was a gang of about 15 skinheaded kids drunk out their heads, jumping off the bloody bridge above our base. That was quite unnerving, because we had to sit under these wheels. I didn't want to let them know we were there, in case it got out of hand, but within 20 minutes, out come the police.
Yeah.
I took one away, but that was, geez, if I'd have gone out and said, the wrong person would have said, oh, you little buggers, and then you'd have probably got beaten up, like, you know, but, you know, so I've never been terrified on the bank, because I quite like the night, and the only thing that can hurt you at night is another human being, isn't it? But the warthog thing, that was pretty cool, mate. Have some of that.
Yeah.
Don't listen to hedgehogs when they're in ecstasy, mate, inspiration point.
Yeah, well, you know, that reminds me of a thing I had on the Scout Lake a few years back. I had something similar. It's a bivvy at night, and it was, I just thought, oh my God, some animal is killing another animal, and it was literally like death squeals, and I just thought, okay. And then it stopped after a short while, but that might have been some some hedgehog at it.
Could have been some activity, some nocturnal activity from hedgehogs. Honest to God, the noise was so... When we turned the torch on these things, we just both absolutely exploded with laughter, because they're not even the size of a bloody football. Yeah. And they were making far more noise than their size allows them to, I tell you. I don't know which one was making the noise, though, the woman or the male. I'm not sure. It sounded painful, so I'm guessing it was the female.
I think hedgehog sex is probably is painful.
Well, certainly for the missus. Should we talk about how they were doing it? It wasn't hedgehog style, it was dog style. I really can't imagine it was very comfortable for either, actually, but there you go. His belly was exposed, and suppose a bit to me was exposed, but they were very noisy, and they didn't stop making the bloody noise when we were there, so we didn't want to turn the whole thing for a dog in affair, so we slipped back to the baby's birth kettle on.
Yeah. You've got me curious now. When we finish tonight, I'm going to put hedgehog sex into YouTube and see what comes up.
Oh, that's nice, yeah. That puts a whole new slant on this conversation, doesn't it? If hedgehog sex on Google goes through the... Well, after you play this out there, monitor it. If there's anywhere monitor it, Mark, check it out, mate. So, bloody hell. Awesome, mate. Tiny little creatures with a very high appetite for sex.
Yeah, it's a funny one. You wouldn't expect hedgehogs to be making a weird sound. Do you remember reading a post from Jason Walker? He was fishing a reservoir in Manchester a year or two ago, and he had an experience he didn't know, like a supernatural, he didn't know what it was, some sort of screeching behind him in the bushes. Like, he described it as a woman being raped, but it was actually an animal, he thinks, some sort of... And it sounded like it was charging through the bushes behind him. It totally shit him up. But I think it reminds me, like, what you're saying about the hedgehogs, what Briggsy said about it. Not Briggsy, sorry, Briggsy's next. What Ian Russell says about the hedgehogs. Some animals can make some funny old noises at night, can't they?
Yeah, I remember an incident on the Scout Lake when... That you are literally away, as far away from civilization. There's no light pollution anywhere, and it's just underfished. Just no one fishes it. You're there on your own most of the time. And there's one night. In reality, it was probably, I don't know, a fox catching some small little rodent for dinner or something. But it was right behind the bivvy, and something was squealing as it was getting murdered and devoured. And it woke me up, and I was like, well, let me put this mozzie mesh down to protect myself.
Yeah, it's foxes make a funny noise at night as well, don't they? Is it the females, or there's certain mating calls, isn't there, of certain animals that if you are out in the woods, out in the wild, a little bit spooky, you know, on your own at night, there's you can definitely start thinking about things, hearing noises, and kind of you know, put the willies up yourself, so to speak. But I mean, there's no worse feeling than actually being scared because you're fishing somewhere that's a little bit moody, you know, maybe because of locals or you know, the crime, or you know, we know all the early Raysbury stories, fishing around sort of Horton and Raysbury before Horton was fenced, and you know, the you'd wake up in the night finding people with their hands in your bags stealing gear, and there's no worse feeling than that, isn't there, actually being scared for your safety. I remember Daryl on the first round of Scary Stories, he had an incident, didn't he, fishing, was it Lake in Belgium? We had some moody guys coming round. I think they're some of the worst feelings. Alan Blair told a story on the last Eurobanks where they were fishing a park lake in France near the Eiffel Tower, and I think they had stuff stolen every night. They were literally like chaining stuff to the legs of the bed chair, and people still, you know, having their hands in it in the night while they're sleeping, with no bivvy over them or anything or whatever, people just going in. I don't know. That's the worst thing, I think. I've never sat too long on a lake where I don't feel safe. You know what I mean?
No, I haven't. I mean, if you know people are going to be stealing your gear at night, why even fish there? I mean, how much do you want to catch a fish?
I was fishing a lake known as Ransom Road. You remember that place in Northamptonshire?
I remember that one with the after the fish you were told in there, and it wasn't there at all. I remember that one.
Yeah, supposed 50s we were fishing for that had apparently been caught by a well-known angler. And we won't name names, not here to drop people in the shit. But yeah, apparently these fish were not caught from this particular lake. But it had me fishing one of the lakes that I felt the least secure on ever. I had marker rod and spod rod nicked one night, leaning up against my bivvy. I woke up, I could feel somebody behind the bivvy. You know, I could smell like a cigarette, as if they'd been smoking. Being a non-smoker, you know, I was really sensitive to that. My marker and spod rod was gone in the morning, so there was somebody there. And I just always felt uncomfortable. There was a load of Eastern Europeans coming down barbecuing at night as well, in the evenings, like loads of them, lots of music, noise, and just quite intimidating. There was a car burnt out in the car park while I was there. The vehicles never felt safe. Just everything. I think it's a bit more secure now than it was, from what I hear. But that was the lake. I was fishing it on my own as well. And that was a lake that I felt scared for my safety a number of times on that lake. Yeah, I didn't like it at all. But sometimes, you know, the fish or that chasing or hunting of the fish, it overrides you know, those other things. But Colmere was always a bit spooky at night on your own as well. You were kind of in the woods in the middle of nowhere. But you probably wouldn't bother. You always avoided those sort of lakes. You were a taxi driver for a lot of years, weren't you? And your car was your business, so you'd never fish anywhere where there was any hint of
Yeah, that is very true. That's something that has always been on my mind. And fortunately, in 20-odd years of carp fishing, I've gotten away with it.
When I was younger, I was in a band and I owned all the equipment, which was our livelihood, you know, the PA system, the lights, sort of all the gear used to live in a big transit. Now, we had the transit converted, had a couple of beds in the back, then a bulkhead. Then you couldn't get through the bulkhead. And then like super duper padlocks, you know, like 100 quid in the early 90s, 100 quid padlocks that were supposed to be bolt cropper proof and stuff. And you know, all the bands in the area, we lived in Luton as well, which is a pretty rough area, all the bands used to have, you know, these big locks converted, immobilizers put on and stuff. But it still used to worry me, like parking it on lakes. I used to fish a lot of these sort of Watford and Colne Valley lakes at the time. I had a Boy Leisure ticket. And it was always on your mind, leaving the vehicle somewhere. And there was one particular lake, actually, where I had my first 30 from, first 30 and first 20, which is called Woburn Sands. And there was a lot of car theft around there. It's not too far from Milton Keynes, that sort of area. There was a lot of car break-ins, joyriding and stuff in those days around there. That maybe there still is, I don't know. But there was a bit of it was quite a long walk, and this is sort of Barra days, you know, when barras were like really, and you couldn't have got a barra there anyway. There was like quite a long walk along fields and stuff, and there was a bit of a shortcut. If you could park by this pub down like the other end of the lane, and you could walk along a train track, obviously highly illegal, but it sort of halved the distance that you needed to go with your gear. So I used to park in this pub car park. It also didn't look like you were fishing as well, because it was like nowhere near the lake. So obviously if you had a vehicle parked at the other end where all the fishermen parked, it's pretty obvious for anyone that knew or had half a clue that it was a fisherman's vehicle. Whereas if you parked near the pub, it could have been somebody that was just in the boozer. But I did actually come out one morning back to my vehicle, and all the headlights had been smashed on my van. Both sides. I always used to back it up to what it had an immobiliser on it, so you could never start the vehicle. And I always used to back it up to a wall as well, so you couldn't get in the back door. So even if somebody broke in the front bit in the cab or the side or whatever, they'd never be able to get to where the gear was. But it still left you feeling uncomfortable. And yeah, I'd had the big ones at that point. I had the two biggest fish in the lake. Yeah, it was job done. Once something like that happens, you can't ever relax on that lake again. So it's a bit of a worry. It's similar. There was a lake near you, a park lake, wasn't it, with some big fishing and some anglers that were trying to keep it secret. I mean, sadly, it's the anglers sometimes in a lot of these secretive big fish waters, isn't it? They're the ones that, you know, can sabotage your vehicle.
Yeah, unfortunately it does go on, but I don't know, it's just, it's sad really, it's fishing, you know, there's bigger problems in the world than that.
Yeah, well, let's round it off, a little short story from Mr. Steve Briggs, and then we'll catch you next time.
Other things that have got you worried?
I mean, it's not one to admit, I suppose, but I did used to be frightened of the dark when I was a kid. You know, it's one thing that sort of, you know, always scared me a bit. So, when I was out in the early years fishing out on the bank on my own, I always used to be a bit nervous. And, I mean, years ago, I can remember seeing this, like, sort of glowing thing under the water. And it's, I mean, it sounds stupid, but I thought, I'm sure I can see something glowing there. And I walked around, come back, and there was nothing, no one around anywhere. And it was freaking me out a bit because, you know, I was just all on my own on the lake. And I thought, what is that all about? And in the morning, it was one of those yellow flashing lights off the road on roadworks that someone had just picked up and thrown in the lake. And I could just see this thing, yellow glow, you know, which is nothing to be frightened of, but it did sort of freak me out a little bit. probably the most nervous I've been anywhere. I fished for a while on this lake in Epping Forest, and it was right in the middle of the forest, and it was a really, really creepy place. And it was only after I'd done a couple of nights on there that my mate told me that there'd actually been a little girl found, you know, a body, she'd been murdered, and her body had been hidden in a hollow tree, and it was only a few yards from where I used to fish. And it was, you know, it just used to freak me out, and I wanted to fish this lake, I really wanted to fish there, and in the end I just stopped fishing it because because most of the time I was there on my own, and I just couldn't sleep. It was one of those where you close your eyes to go to sleep, and then I'd open them again because I didn't want to go to sleep, you know. It was all a bit sort of shadows of trees around you and things like that, and it was just a really sort of eerie, creepy atmosphere. And I just had those thoughts in my mind, but that was the most sort of creeped out I've been, I suppose, on there, really.
Yeah, I can imagine that being sort of creepy. I imagine that being pitch black as well in the middle of a forest.
It was this tiny little lake, really overgrown and weedy, and it hardly ever got fish, and I understand why now. It was all right in the daytime, you know, when he went there in the day it was fine, it was just a little lake, but as it got dark it just turned into this horrible place, horrible creepy place. It was just waiting, counting the hours till it got day, you know, light again in the morning. Oh, it's horrible.
So big thank you to all our guests. That is the end of this series of extras. Thank you for waiting with us. It took a while to get all these out due to a few commitments of people and stuff, so we will keep this format going. If we get an opportunity, we find a good storyteller, someone who's particularly good at telling stories or has got a lot of history in the carp scene, then we will fire all these questions to him, maybe put them out in one episode if we come across somebody. And I think for the extras of the future, we're going to do some live Q&As where our extra members can actually interact live, maybe ask the guests some question themselves. So I know sometimes when I listen to interviews that you've done, Mark, and, you know, especially interesting people like John Llewellyn, I find myself wanting to ask stuff during the interview. So I'm sure our listeners are exactly the same when we're, you know, when we're asking questions or interviewing people.
I'm exactly the same. When, you know, there was one little bit that John asked me to edit out afterwards. It was just, he'd got the timeline slightly wrong over something. But as I was listening to it back, you know, you think, oh, I should have asked this then. And I've been the same when I've listened to you. You know, just for every podcast you listen to, it's like, ask him this, ask him that, you know.
Yeah, so I think what we'll do, we'll try and get some people on live. We'll advertise a time and a day, and then you'll be able to... you know, get in the chat box, and if something comes up as we're interviewing or as we're chatting that you want to ask, then you'll be able to jump in and fire a question in, or just troll us a little bit. So yeah, keep your eyes out for the live Q&As in the future. They'll be exclusive to extra members, and we will do some of these story based ones with similar questions, injuries, scary stories, red letter days, all the stuff that we've been doing. We'll do those again if we can get an opportunity to sit down with an interesting guest. So until next time, Mark, it's a goodbye from him
and a goodbye from me.
Yeah, catch you later.
Is that the right way around?
I think so. Look at me. Turn on to me. Look at me. Look at me. Turn on to me.